Chapter 56.
Feeding has left. 5.
After the past 3 months, Clara had been building her character in such a way that maximized her stealth capabilities. She had given herself several spells that allowed her to sneak in and out of places unseen. She already had the Cone of Silence and Invisibility spells, and she had the ring that allowed her to cast Miniaturize for a total of 5 minutes 3 times a day, making it much more impressive than my version. And when she hit level 40, she gave herself a skill that would become very important. It was called Pass Unseen. The skill was exclusive to Fae and Brownies. It allowed her to move about the forest and the rest of the hinterland and remain undetectable to non-demonic, non-NPC creatures. That category included pets. It was an expensive skill, and she said it was absolutely required to gain certain high-level mounts. That skill was the reason why Banksy hadn't seen or heard from Clara in weeks, even though she had been coming and going regularly from Avanik. When Clara flipped it on, she wasn't just invisible to Banksy. He couldn't hear or smell or feel her passage in any way. Unless she physically touched him, she simply wasn't there. After her confrontation with Cenk, she decided she needed to learn as much as she could about his comings and goings. She was spying on him, collecting his schedule, all the while avoiding detection by his ever-present early alert system. Olga. Olga the Frog. Olga was a creature called a slobbering grunter, and she was the third evolution of a type of familiar called a skull pole. I didn't know what the middle evolution was, but skull poles were little tadpole-like animals that started out as deep-dive-only familiars. They lived within a guardian's blood system, and they leveled by eating, just like Banksy. The slobbering grunter, I learned, could not go deep dive at all. She could teleport. She had the ability to swallow prey whole, which I'd already seen. In addition, she was one of the rare familiars who shared experience and leveled by eating, not killing. Cenk had the ability to see through her eyes. That made her the perfect guard frog. But since she couldn't go deep dive, she spent most of her time hopping around the grasslands near Orthrus, swallowing any creature stupid enough to get near her. Olga had a particular fondness for a fat type of glowing grasshopper. They were as big as my fist, but they were harmless. Their butts glowed in the night, and if you killed one, the luminescent goo got everywhere. That made Olga easy to track in the darkness because her face was usually smeared with glowing grasshopper guts. The bugs were called glasshops. Clara spent several weeks doing nothing but following the frog. Because the marker over the familiar's head indicated when Cenk was offline, Clara had gotten a pretty good idea of the man's schedule. Cenk logged in once a day, and he stayed online anywhere from a half hour to 2 hours. It didn't make a difference if it was a weekend or not. He almost always logged in between 7 and 8 p.m. game time, which we knew was 10 or 11 p.m. his time in Toronto, Canada. Sometimes Olga would teleport away while he was online, which suggested he was tooling about somewhere outside of Orthrus. Once, Clara said he'd emerged from the kaiju and played catch with Olga for almost an hour. He'd thrown a glowing ball over and over, and the antlered frog had happily hopped after it and returned it. They both appeared to love the game, despite it being pitch black outside and drizzling. The predictability of Cenk's comings and goings gave us a template for how we were going to pull off this part of the plan. Everything we were going to do from this point forward was going to bring a lot of attention to ourselves. As a result, we had to deal with our Cenk problem now. We had to incapacitate him, but we had to do it in such a manner he didn't realize we were the cause of it. By this time tomorrow, the entire north side of the map was going to be on fire, and we had to make sure he wasn't able to see it all going down. It wasn't a perfect plan. It probably wasn't even a good one. But if it worked, and we needed it to work, it was going to be glorious.
There! He's done it! That owl-headed asshole has done it!
We sat at a cafe in a middle-class, earth-magic area of Medina. Clara sipped on hot chocolate. I couldn't have anything, of course. Still, I could smell the drink. And for the first time in a long time, I felt my stomach rumble. God, I missed eating. I looked into the sky, searching. As usual, black flocks of demons soared above, screaming down into the city, constantly attempting to dive bomb anyone they saw. The demons spent the day dropping rocks and living creatures on the NPC citizens. The magic shell around Medina protected us from the rocks. It did not protect us from the falling animals. Thankfully, they mostly focused on the northernmost part of town, splattering the temple with animal bombs. Today, the air was especially thick with Pazuzu, gargoyles, and blood wyverns. Then, I saw them. Right on time. Yeah, she looks pretty pissed off. My ex-wife had a dog that would squirm like that whenever you picked her up and threatened to give her a bath. I shook my head, suddenly remembering that damn dog. Her name was Bubbles. Ruth had named her. Ugh. That dog was part Chihuahua, part Hellhound, part what the fuck. She literally barked herself to death one day. Gave herself a heart attack while scream barking at the UPS guy.
I never liked little dogs. I used to have a pet hedgehog myself. Oh, okay, he's dropping her.
We were worried that Olga was just going to teleport away the moment she got grabbed. But Andrus had scoffed at the idea.
Do not fret about how I will accomplish my goal. Only worry about the result,
he had said. This part of the city was just a few blocks north of the town square with the main transport gazebo. It bordered the poor area of town. It also overlooked a large gray building that was both a substation for the city guard and the headquarters of the Office of Medina Animal Control. An earlier conversation with Renault had given me the idea.
They take their work very seriously. If he knocks down a single farmer's stall, you will attract their attention.
We had hired the most powerful, most celebrated assassin in this world to kidnap and frame a frog. Because Andrus was a shapeshifter, I asked him to do something very simple. He needed to take the form of the largest blood wyvern he could. Then he was to swoop down and pick up Olga the frog. While clutching the frog in his talons, he was to fly directly over Medina, flying as close to the shield as he could. Then he was to drop the frog directly into the spire. Before the invasion, the top level of the spire extended well beyond the limits of the city shield. As a result, those top levels had long since been lopped off, leaving a jagged and exposed floor as the new topmost level. Andrus was to fly close, and he was to drop Olga directly into the building, which would ensure her survival. But first, he would cast his favorite charm on the frog, a spell called Enrage. Since she was inside the city limits at that point, Olga wouldn't be able to teleport out. We'd confirmed this part with Winky, who was very pissed off at being used as a guinea pig. If Olga wanted to return to Jenk, she needed to hop to the transport gazebo and then teleport away, just like everybody else. Jenk wouldn't come online for several hours. That was plenty of time for the frog to get herself into all sorts of trouble, especially a frog that was charmed into thinking everybody she saw was an enemy.
They're already coming.
Clara pointed. Sure enough, the Office of Animal Control was suddenly frothing over with brownies and Fae, coming out and heading for the spire. We followed at a discreet distance. It was important that Olga not see us. The brownies could fly using a pair of gossamer wings, but apparently utilizing them was frowned upon within the city limits, so the mixed group of animal control officers jogged the five blocks over to the base of the spire. They arrived in time to watch a Sundered explode against the street. A second, then a third followed the first. I traced the trajectory of the falling NPCs, and they came from a window about halfway down the spire. A spider-like night barber woman leaped from the windows as we watched. She trailed silk from her ass. Olga's tongue whipped out the window, attaching to the back of the screaming woman. She was sucked back in. An entire wall of the spire blew out, the result of some unknown spell. More bodies fell, crashing to the street like rain. You know, Olga is strong. but she's usually not that strong. I think the demon may have given her more of a boost than what we asked for.
As long as she doesn't take down the whole city, the more damage, the better.
The small group of animal control officers looked at each other uncertainly before running inside. A mixed group of regular city guards followed them inside a moment later. For several minutes, nothing happened. A group of NPCs hesitantly peeked out their windows and doors of nearby buildings and started talking with one another. Then a window smashed on the third floor, and bloody husks of multiple animal control officers splattered to the ground. The NPCs panicked anew, all rushing back into their homes. A few moments later, the front door opened, and a human city guard rushed outside. A tongue snaked out, grasping him, and he was pulled inside. Olga smashed through the front window, showering glass all over the street. The last few bystanders scattered as they were set upon. The frog devoured everyone in her path. It would be comic if it wasn't so terrifying. Olga wasn't that large. She was the size of an overfed pig. Her normally lumpy exterior was crisscrossed with angry purple veins. Yep. We were hidden on the third floor of a building a half block away. Unless that enrage spell comes with a massive strength bonus, he threw something else into the mix. When Olga jumped, she leaped 30 feet at a time, and cobblestones shattered where she landed. Her rampage down the street continued unchallenged for several minutes, long enough that I began to worry she wouldn't be stopped at all. Jesus. I think we just gave Andrus an idea on how to destroy the city.
Doesn't matter. We'll be in here in a couple of days anyway.
Multiple tracked vehicles and armored personnel carriers turned the corner, emerging from the celestial area of the city. Olga charged one of the APCs, knocking it over. Then one of the larger tanks belched blue fire. The whole street shook. Olga was hit with a direct blast, splattering her down the street. And just like that, it was over. A new group of Fey and Brownie animal control officers descended on the remains. They scooped some of the goop up and poured it into what looked like a large wineskin. They rushed back toward their building with the container of Olga goo. A moment later, a voice boomed out of the loudspeaker of one of the police vehicles.
Attention, citizens. We have successfully captured the threat. The Grunter is regenerated in the animal control offices, and it is safe for you to resume your normal daily duties. Lycan Jenk, if you're nearby, you are advised to immediately proceed to the proper authorities to discuss this matter. Once you pay the fine, you may receive your familiar back. In the meantime, she's being held at the Greater Midian Animal Control Center.
I put out my fist, and Clara bumped it. I grinned at Clara. Well, that was the easy part. It took almost 3 hours for Jenk to log in, discover his beloved pet was missing, and for him to make his way to Medina to bail his psychotic frog out of familiar prison. This time, we weren't taking any chances with being discovered. Clara remained invisible while she observed from the roof of a nearby building to watch. I kept low on the roof, completely out of sight. I didn't dare peer over the edge. Darkness descended on the city, but luckily this area of town had electric access, and streetlights dotted the roads.
He's coming. He doesn't appear worried or suspicious. He's at a potion stall chatting with the human running it. Okay, he's going into the animal control building.
Go, I said to the street kid. Tell Captain Renault that it's time. He'll pay your two teeth when you get there. Remember to stick around in case we need you for Plan B. Remember what you're supposed to do.
Oh, remember, I'll get another 5 teeth if I have to do it.
The brownie was covered in dirt and had holes in his wings. The boy's name was Jar. That's right. Now go. The boy zipped away down the stairs. Renault and his regiment of newly minted city guards stood nearby, ready for part two of the plan. I didn't want the entire guard regiment to be worm surgeons. That would be too suspicious. Lycans used resurrection and wind magic, making their natural enemies the night barbers, who used celestial and earth. It was easy to recruit them to this task, especially after Olga had slaughtered an entire nest of the spiderling NPCs during her rampage through the tower. Renault also added a dryad and a nerve agent to the group of eight guards, just to round it out. It was crucial that this happened the moment Jenk stepped outside of the animal control offices. That would serve two purposes. First, it would make this whole setup seem more like an AI-created game event. Also, it would prevent Jenk from getting to one of the many banks that littered the city. 5 minutes passed. I spent the time staring at the sky, watching the demons continue to swirl above. The darker it got, the harder it was to see them, except the Pazuzu, who often carried flaming whips, giving them the appearance of oversized fireflies. A gargoyle emerged out of the darkness and dropped a rock right at my head. I watched as the stone disintegrated the moment it touched the invisible shield. Only the Blood Wyverns were smart enough to drop living creatures on the city, but they focused on the northern part of town. I'd heard the streets there were covered in blood and fur and guts, despite the constant cleaning of the street sweepers. It was rare for something to survive the fall. I hadn't yet visited that part of the city. We weren't welcome there. If all went well today and tomorrow, we'd be there soon enough.
I see him. He has Olga with him. Yes! He's being confronted by Renault!
The fine for Olga's spree through the spire was set at 6.5 million teeth. We had confirmed the amount with Renault. Like with the former city of Little Cibola, the Medina system for civil and criminal penalties was completely out of whack thanks to Anatoly's tinkering with the code. That meant, the moment Jenk stepped foot outside, he couldn't possibly have more than 3.5 million teeth on him. Hopefully, he'd have less. He'd have received a notification telling him the amount of teeth he needed to bail Olga out, but assuming the worst possible scenario of 3.5 million, that meant three things had to happen. First, Jenk needed to somehow raise the wrath of the city guard. We had this part covered. Second, he needed to create such a ruckus that the fine for his behavior was sufficiently high. And finally, he needed to be captured or killed before he could get to either a bank or a transport gazebo. I was worried about this third part. We had no idea what level Jenk was, but it was well over 50. He and Olga had easily slaughtered every living soul in Kinnegad. He could probably butcher his way through Medina, too. Captain Renault was only level 35, but there were eight of them. Hopefully, that would be enough. Renault was to approach Jenk and challenge him to single combat. He had readily agreed to this once we explained that the Lycan had done great harm to Clara. Renault's reasoning for the challenge was that Jenk's frog had killed several close friends of his during her rampage, and he was there to collect the debt. This was just the sort of mini-quest that would show up in a game for it to be believable. If Jenk accepted the challenge, he was to be arrested for dueling. If he declined the challenge, Renault and his fellows would attack anyway. If Jenk was smart, he'd immediately recognize the danger he was in, and he'd attempt to flee. He'd cast his shield spell, the same one he'd used during his assault on Kinnegad. Then he'd rush out of the city. He could then deal with the fine next time he was in town. We were ready for this.
He's trying to weasel out of the duel. Renault looks like he might be wavering. Shit. I wonder what his charm is. Knowing that asshole, he probably has it maxed out. Oh god, he's shaking Renault's hand!
Oh, hell. Plan B, do it now!
Clara dropped the red scarf off the edge of the building. One building over, Jar and a couple of his street kid friends were now overturning pots that contained about 200 glasshops, the luminescent grasshopper bugs that Olga couldn't get enough of. They upturned the pots on the very edge of the building, placing them where some of them would leap off and then land in the midst of the city patrol. This last-ditch effort was a little obvious for my taste, but hopefully Jenk would think the grasshoppers came from the demons circling above.
No! Oh god, it's working! One of the bugs landed in the hair of a worm surgeon guard, and Olga just shot her tongue out. Only she sucked in the entire guard, not just the bug.
Gunfire cracked while Clara gave me a play-by-play. I did not dare peek my head over the corner.
Ooh, he's really fast with his handguns. He shot Renault. Ugh, poor guy. He killed a few more guards. Like you said, he's cast a shield. It's like a half circle. He's looking around now, shooting any guards that appear. Oh, shit, man. He killed all 8 of them in like 5 seconds. Olga's going crazy for the grasshoppers. She really loves those things.
Shit. Renault was going to be pissed when he regenerated. It was his fault, though. Via Renault, we had warned the animal control officers that there might be trouble right outside their offices. Unlike Renault, these folks had a real score to settle. I imagined a rich lichen strolling into their office and throwing down a ton of cash to bail his murdering frog out didn't sit too well with them.
The shield is gone.
Clara remained invisible. She'd had to renew the spell at least 4 times now.
One of the Fae cast the counterspell. Brownies aren't taking any chances now. They're focusing on Olga. Yep, Olga is down. Captured in a net spell. She's definitely not nearly as strong as she was before. Jake is running and shooting. He's really good with those things. His guns shoot bullets, but he doesn't ever reload. I wonder where he got them.
The crack, crack, crack of traditional gunfire intermixed with pulse rifles was an odd juxtaposition, like a sci-fi show melding into an episode of Gunsmoke. Above, I noticed even the Pazuzu had stopped their swooping about to watch the gunplay far below.
He's running for the gazebo. He's not gonna make it. There's a couple chasers coming down the road in his direction, but he doesn't see them yet. Wait, he's turned the corner, going into an alley. Holy shit!
What? I started to sit up.
Stay down!
Clara changed her position. I couldn't see her, but I sensed her movements and heard the rocks scattering on the rooftop.
He just leaped from the ground all the way up to the roof of the building next to us. It's 1 story shorter than this one, so like 6 stories up. If he comes this way, he's going to see you.
What is he doing now?
He's peering over the edge. He's looking the other way for now. There are hundreds of guards swirling about down there. I think he might be settling in to wait it out. Nobody saw us jump up.
Okay. I was now stuck on the ground, leaning against a stone chimney. You gotta go down there and tell the guards where he is. Tell them he can jump, so they have to put someone on all the roofs, including this one. If he runs, hopefully he won't run in this direction and see me.
Okay. Don't move. I'll be right back. I'll have to turn off my invisibility to talk to the guards, though.
Do it on the other side of this building. He won't be able to see you.
Keep your head down. Don't risk it.
She didn't need to remind me. I stayed in my position on the roof, but I moved around the stone chimney, putting it between myself and the next roof over. I need an invisibility spell. I quickly scrolled through my available spells list. I didn't have that option anywhere. I'd spent most of my more recent skill points on several charm-enhancing and rifle-aiming skills, leaving me with only 22 skill points, which I was saving for emergencies. If Jank seeing you and deciding to unplug your rig isn't an emergency, then I don't know what is. I spent 5 skill points on a level 20 skill I'd been eyeing for some time. It was called Magic Bloom, and it added green waypoints to your minimap, showing you invisible sources of magic. The moment it activated, my map became awash in green lights. I realized with horror that if Jank had this spell, he could probably see Clara's location when she was on the roof. But we were surrounded by magic blooms, and hopefully she'd be lost in the background noise. Level 2 of the spell told you the school of magic sourcing the bloom. Level 3, which required a bionic upgrade, told you the specific spell that was being used. But for now, I kept it on level 1. Since he wasn't in my line of sight and he was actively trying to hide, his player dot didn't appear on my map, just like I hoped my dot didn't appear on his. But I did see a faint green bloom on the roof next door. I hoped that was him, the source being his armor or guns or a spell he was preparing. Now at least I had a decent idea of his location, and I'd know if he decided to jump over here. Less than 30 seconds later, a crunch of gravel told me he had indeed decided to get a better view by jumping on the highest roof in the neighborhood. Sure enough, his green dot had moved over to this roof. This was a big building, but he was a mere 20 feet away. Fucking hell. I listened to him move to the edge. I slowly, deliberately pulled my gun. I was loath to waste my once every 24 hours invulnerable spell. I needed to save it for tomorrow. So instead, I prepared to jam down on my shield.
Hey.
Jenk spoke. I almost jumped out of my skin. He'd seen me. Holy shit, we were fucked.
No, I'm here. I'm downstairs in the rig. I'm playing DOB, prepping to run the riot. Yeah, your sister was just down here playing. Nadia, you two have to work it out. You are 20 years old. You're not a little girl anymore. It's almost midnight. Peyton needs to go to bed.
With utter amazement, I realized I was listening to Jenk talk on his phone using his rig's connection. And unless I was going crazy, I was pretty certain the person he was talking to, 20-year-old Nadia, was his daughter. His daughter. Holy shit. Jenk had kids. I guess the revelation shouldn't have surprised me. Smash South had a kid too, I knew. Serial killers often had families that had no idea what was going on. Plus, I guess I had kind of suspected it already. Clara had said there were two women taking care of her daughter. Was one of them this Nadia? And was the baby this Peyton? Was it Clara's baby? But that man, he just didn't seem the type. That brutal, savage, oddly charismatic psychopath. He seemed so normal right now. I was so thrown off by this that I momentarily forgot where I was and what I was doing.
Nobody is going to be open this late, Nadia. I don't care. Melinda works, and you don't. You'll have to do it. Pepperoni, cheese, it doesn't matter. But make sure Peyton is down, okay? I guess I won't start my quest then. No, it's all right. This group isn't up to my standards anyway. Just call me when it gets here.
I'm downstairs in the rig. Your sister was just down here playing. It took me a moment to understand the gravity of what these two sentences meant. Unless his daughter was in on the conspiracy, which I highly doubted, then Clara and I weren't located in Jenk's house. He'd said three names. I said them over and over so I wouldn't forget. Nadia, Peyton, Melinda. Nadia and Melinda were his daughters, his older daughters. The baby was Peyton. Clara had said the first time she woke up, it was in a warehouse somewhere. I still suspected it was in Canada, and it was somewhere close to Jenk. But it was a relief to know we weren't right there. Also, as awful as the kidnapping of Clara's daughter was, it sounded like he was genuinely caring for the kid. If it was indeed Peyton. For all I knew, he was as much a psychotic, abusive asshole to his children as he was to his victims here in the game. But he didn't sound like one on the phone. He'd just handled a semi-stressful interaction with his daughter much the way I would have. He sounded like a dick, sure, but I didn't get that power-mad abuse sense about him. I felt oddly relieved at that. I knew Clara wouldn't see it that way. I don't know. Maybe I was just grasping at straws.
We know you're up there.
I knew that sound. It was the amplification of a groundling mech.
What the hell, man?
And then, all hell broke loose. An Epsilon Holdings EP-12 police cruiser descended from above, crash-landing on the roof right next to me. The vehicle was identical to the one I'd stolen. The Sundered, behind the mounted gun, hurled fire at Jenk as the driver leaped forward. At the same time, multiple groundling mechs landed on the rooftop, smashing down with ferocity as they power-jumped from the ground. None of them gave me any heed, as I was suddenly surrounded by a dozen screaming, shooting, and advancing Elite City guards. The Sundered behind the mounted gun flew backward, his head blown clean off. Blue liquid spewed from the wound. I pushed back around the edge of the chimney as I watched Jenk leap off the top of one of the mechs. I don't know what he did, but the armor toppled over, falling right off the roof. The car bucked as Jenk leaped inside. I cowered, shrinking further back, praying he wouldn't look down. And then the flying car was rising into the air. It was almost directly above me. He was doing the exact same thing I did. He was going to get away. Motherfucker! Without even thinking of the consequences, I shot my grappling hook, switching to the four grabbers with the upgraded sticky pincers. I latched onto the bottom of the car just before it flew out of range. I was bodily yanked off the roof. I scraped off the chimney as I rose into the air. As I retracted, pulling myself closer to the flying cop car, a menu popped up.
Flash DP-12 Cruiser.
I mentally jammed down on yes.
You have gained control of this vehicle.
My interface filled with the vehicle's status bars and buttons just as my arm finished retracting. I dangled directly underneath the car as fire flew up from the streets at us. Jenk had decided to forego the transport gazebo and was making a run for the city limits. He'd be there in seconds. The car would probably get shot down by the demons, but outside the city, it wouldn't matter. Damn it all to hell. I jammed down on blow core.
You have just survived a deep dive into Kaiju Battlefield Surgeon, Episode 8, Olga. Written by Matt Dinneman, featuring Gary Francis Furlong as Fronk, Andrea Parsnow as Banksy, Will Watt as Andrus, Harlan Guthrie as Jink, and Dory Sachs as Clara. Music by Aaron J. Morton. Sound design and additional music by Ahmed Mahmoud. Additional sound effects by Richard Smith and Augustine Jacob. Editing and mastering by Richard Smith. Narrated and directed by Jeff Hayes. Want more Kaiju Battlefield Surgeon? Join our newsletter at soundbooththeatre.com and stay up to date on the next episode, releasing every last Thursday of the month. Can't wait for a month for the whole story? You can find Kaiju Battlefield Surgeon on Kindle by searching Amazon. Can't get enough of the Matt Dinneman and Jeff Hayes team? Check out Dungeon Crawler Carl on Audible. Looking for more game-lit and lit RPG audio? Check out the fantastic communities out there and Facebook groups, including the Gamelit Society, Lit RPG Books, and the Lit RPG Forum. Or, if Reddit is more your style, check out r/LitRPG. Text copyright 2019 by Matt Dinneman. Production copyright 2021 by Sound Booth Theatre. A Sound Booth Theatre production.